Oh, I can hear an echo. So, hello, good afternoon. If you came to see me this morning, thank you for coming back. Unexpected. So this morning was very much a kind of slidey kind of overview of where Docker fits in the rest of the open source world and what it can do for enterprises. And this session is very much demo heavy. So I'm going to be showing you how you can take a swarm, a cluster of machines running Docker, and run different types of workloads. So some Windows, some Linux workloads in the same Docker swarm. So this morning I covered the whole notion of your Docker engine runs on your server, and if you want to run an application in Docker, you run a container. And the actual process that you're running lives on the host. So it's all packaged inside the Docker image, but the actual process is running on the host. There's no hypervisor. If you were to run 10 IIS containers on a Windows server and then look at the task list on the server, you would see 10 instances of W3WP, even if you haven't got IIS installed on the server. So because of that, you can only run Windows images on Windows servers, because a Linux server would have no idea what to do with an exe. Likewise, in the Linux world, your Docker engine runs as a daemon, so it runs in the background. You run your container, and it starts a process which runs on the server, exactly the same. But similarly, you couldn't run Nginx on a Windows machine, because Windows wouldn't know what to do with that Nginx process. So the images are not transferable. You have to run, the only requirement is a matching operating system and Docker, and then you can run on Windows, you can run all the Windows images. On Linux, you can run all the Linux images. But Docker itself is cross-platform, so the API is the same on Windows and Linux, and you can control them both from any client. So the Docker command line, when you run Docker run, Docker pull, that's the command line is talking to an API, which is running on the Docker engine, and you can use Windows to connect to Linux, and you can use Linux to connect to Windows, and vice versa. And the platform itself is cross-platform. So Docker's written in Go. There are standard patterns for swapping out implementations to say, I'm on Windows, I need to create a container like this. I'm on Linux, I create a container like that. But fundamentally, the vast majority of the code base is the same. So it's one code base, one API, cross-platform. Now, when you come to production, you want to run your containers in a highly available, scalable way. Then you start with a swarm. And the notion of a swarm is you have multiple servers, they're all running Docker, and you join them together in a swarm. So on one machine, you run Docker swarm initialize, and the others, you run Docker swarm join. And that's literally it. What you've got there is a bunch of machines which you treat as one unit, and all the communication between them is secure. It's all done with TLS. The nodes themselves will recycle keys, and they keep themselves secure, so everything's encrypted between the nodes. And you can only join a node if you've got a secret token. So you can't have a rogue machine joins your cluster, because you need to know the private token to join in. And then you administer it in the same way from the Docker CLI. And you can have a hybrid swarm, a mixture. So you can have a Linux worker, a Linux manager, and a Windows machine, all in the same swarm, all being managed in the same way. Now, because you have to have, I've got a line, and it shouldn't be there, we are. Because you have to have Windows images running on Windows machines, you can label these nodes. So in some future version of Docker, it will understand, and you will say, run my image, and it will say, well, it's a Windows image, I'm going to run it on a Windows machine. But for now, when you start your containers in swarm mode, you can supply a constraint to say, this container is a Windows image, so it must run on a Windows server. Or you can say maybe it's a database image, and it must run on a server that's got the label to say it's got a huge RAID array, or whatever, however you want to do it. So what I've got set up, I'll show you what I've got initially. So on my Mac here, I've got two virtual machines. And here they are. One Windows 2016 machine and one Ubuntu machine. So I'm not going to use the machines at all. I'm going to connect them all through the Docker CLI. So in this tab here on the left, I've got a connection to my Windows server. So if I run Docker version, it will tell me the client version at the top, which is running on Darwin, so that's running on my Mac, and the server is Linux, so I'm looking at my Linux machine there, sorry. And on the other, if I run Docker version, if I could spell, then I've got, again, same client, because I'm running from my Mac, and I'm connected to my Windows server. So I've got two connections to two VMs that are running. The VMs, I've got Docker installed, and those are the things that are going to run the workloads. So what I've also done is I've created them as a swarm. So back on my Linux machine, I can get a list of all the nodes that are in the swarm. And it tells me that they leave you a random ID that Docker generates to make sure they're unique. It tells me the status, it tells me which one's the manager. And if I had several managers, I'd have one manager in standby mode, so there's only ever one active manager. Those host names have got some indication of whether it's Ubuntu or Windows, but Docker doesn't really care. Doesn't really care what those machines are. If I had a much bigger swarm, I would manage it all in the same way. So on the manager node is where I schedule work to happen, and the manager decides where to put things. So I've got a bunch of things that are already up and running. Let's clear this down. So I've got a distributed application that I've already started as services. And I've got a few things here that I'll walk you through in a second. So I've got a database. I've got a website, which is an ASP.NET website, not .NET Core, full .NET. I've got a message queue for asynchronous messaging. I've got Elasticsearch, I've got Kibana, and I've got some message handlers. So what happens with this application is you use the website. When you submit a form, it sends a message to the queue. One of those message handlers picks up that message and saves your data in SQL Server, and the other one picks it up and saves it in Elasticsearch, and then you can access it through Kibana. Those are all Windows images. So you'll see the image names there. Most of them have got the word six-eyed to start with them, which is my handle. So those are the images that I've created that are based on Windows and install whatever it is I'm using, Elasticsearch or Kibana. The Microsoft one is Microsoft SQL Server, but that's running on Windows 2. And the one that doesn't specifically say is NATS, which is the message queue, and that's running on Nano Server. So NATS is a really high performance message queue. It's open source, it's written in Go, so it's cross-platform, and that is based on Windows Nano Server. It doesn't need the full footprint of Windows Server Core. So that's all up and running. On my VM, I've exposed the port for the website, so I can navigate to, I think it's .8. And that's my website. So this is running on my Windows machine, all as Docker containers. So this is a container for the website. It's really boring demo. It's all open source. You can see it on GitHub if you're particularly interested. And you just fill in a form. And I've got a real problem with filling in forms dishonestly. So even though there's no validation here, and I know the data's going to get thrown away, I really have to put in my real data, which takes a bit more time than it should. So I'm a developer. I can't say I'm an architect because I'm not a developer advocate. Okay, so that's dropped a message onto the message queue, and that's it. So actually, the state which is the start of this demo is the end state from another demo that I do. When I start with that application as a big monolith, I put it in Docker, and then I pull out all these bits to give you asynchronous messaging and to give you some other stuff. So this position that I'm in now is part of is the kind of follow-on from a demo where I split bits out of a monolith. So this is all up and running now, and if I go and look at Kibana, which is on 5601, this is a fresh instance of Kibana. So if you're not familiar with Kibana, it's a front end to Elasticsearch. Elasticsearch is a NoSQL database, massively popular, and Kibana is the front end that kind of lets you do self-service analytics. So there's already an index in there for the document I've just created. All these fields have come from the message handler that created the document. And if I click on Discover, I'll see the details that I put in there. So this is coming from a fresh instance of Elasticsearch running in a Windows container on my Windows machine. So far, this is all Windows, and that's fine. And if you're familiar with Docker Compose, you'll know Docker Compose is how you describe a distributed application like this. So we've got a whole bunch of things that have to work together for the solution as a whole to work. So if my database isn't there, or my database has got a different name than the one I expect, then the message handler can't connect to it. And this compose file is how I would start up all those things for all those Windows servers, all those Windows services running in Docker. Now, the problem with this is that some of these are kind of custom images that I've built myself, like Elasticsearch, that are based on Windows, so I can run it all in a Windows machine. But if I were to come to this from the outside, I might say, well, some of these are open source, cross-platform components. Why am I running them on Windows? Why can't I run them on Linux? Which is obviously what I'm about to do. So I'm going to start with Elasticsearch and Kibana. So what I've currently got is I've got those services running in Windows. So when I created them, I specified that I wanted them to run on a Windows node. Let me increase the size of this. So when I first ran them, I said the node OS label had to be Windows. What I'm going to do is I'm going to kill those services, and then I'm going to create new services running on Linux from a different image. So this is an official image. The official images are things that the Docker team work with the owners to curate. And I'm going to use the official Elasticsearch image, which runs on Linux, and the official Kibana image that runs on Linux too. So I'm going to go through now. I'm not going to change the functionality at all, because it's going to behave in exactly the same way. And notice I'm not stopping anything else. So the whole rest of the application is still running. So when I look at my service list now, I've still got my message handlers and my message queue and my database and my website, but I've cut out the kind of self-service analytics part. Oh, let's clear that down. And so now I'll start new services from my Linux images, specifying that I want them to run on the Linux nodes. So that's gonna, I've already pulled the image, so it's not gonna take too long to start. And that long ID that starts with ERK is a randomly generated service ID. So that's Elasticsearch, and now Kibana. So the way services find each other in a swarm, or even in a single Docker node, is by the service name. So I'm calling this name Kibana, I'm calling the other one name Elasticsearch. The Docker platform's got a DNS server built in. So when my message queue, or my message handler goes to the message queue, it's listening on a particular service name, which gets resolved by DNS inside Docker to point it to the right container. And when it saves a document in Elasticsearch, it will use this service name. So as long as the name's correct, it'll be able to find it through the service resolution through DNS. So now, if I look at what's running, I've got a whole bunch of things that are still, it's still set the same set of service names, but now Elasticsearch is running, instead of being the sick-side image, which is Windows, it's running the official Elasticsearch image, which is Linux, and same for Kibana. So they're running on a different node. They're running on my Linux node, which I can check by looking at the processes on this node. So I'm connected to my Linux node here, and I've got my two containers running, which are Elasticsearch and Kibana, the ones I've just started that are running on Linux. Similarly, I can look at what's running currently on my my Windows node, if I can remember the name. I can see all the containers that are running. Oh. The number of times I write Docker in a day, you would think I would not have a problem spelling it. Oh, I've lost that. Let's do win216 core 3. So on my Windows node, I've got my website, my two message handlers, the message queue, and SQL Server. So that's the Windows side of it, and now I've got a Linux side of it. The application itself won't change. So if I go back to my sign-up page, and I'll just add some twos to that, so we know it's version 2. I immediately get the same very fast response because all that does is drop a message on the queue. A message on the queue has now been picked up by the same Windows message handler. And when it now creates a document in Elasticsearch, it's going to use the Elasticsearch DNS name to find the service. Docker will point it to the Linux container running on the Linux node, and it can connect to it because they're on the same Docker network. They're on the same virtual network. So Kibana is no longer on this node because now it's running on Linux, which I think is 5. Okay, so this is a completely new instance of Kibana running on a different machine, but it looks exactly the same because it's built from the same version of Kibana. And hopefully now when I look at the index name, prospects, there we go. So the behavior is the same. It's still found all these details because of the new image that I've put in. When I go and look at the data that's in Elasticsearch, this is my 22222, because all the old data is gone. So when I killed the Elasticsearch container running on Windows, I hadn't created it to store the data separately, so all that data is gone. So I've got a completely new instance of Elasticsearch that starts off empty and ends up with just my Elton 222 document in there. So now I've changed my application to use to be a hybrid. I'm using Linux for the open source stuff that can be based on Linux, and I'm using Windows for my custom Windows stuff, partly. I've got other things running on Windows still. So let me show you back to my slide deck, and we'll have a look at a solution diagram for all these different components. Okay, so this is how I started. Blue means Windows. So version 1, everything was running on Windows. On the left there is my web container, so that's running my web application. ASP.NET, full ASP.NET running on Windows. It drops messages to the message queue, which was running on Windows. The message handlers, this is SQL Server, this is Elasticsearch, this is Kibana. So version 1, everything's on Windows. Version 2, oh, those are the components. So these things here are all available on Docker Hub, and the three on the left you can have as Windows or Linux. The one on the right, Microsoft SQL Server, I will talk about in a moment. So what I've done is I've moved the reporting to Linux, and now some of these containers are running on Linux. The application hasn't changed. I didn't have to do anything special to say, now you're talking to a Linux container, because the service name hasn't changed. The actual application carried on running If I'd have been using it, I wouldn't have got new data through while I was starting up these new services. But as soon as they were started, the message handler can connect to them and just behave in exactly the same way. It's all transparent as far as the message handler is concerned. So now I'm going to move on to the next one, which is the message queue. That's NATS, which is, again, available on the hub. It's open source. It can run on Linux, so I can move that to Linux too. While all these things are running, you can see that I manage them in exactly the same way. Oh, you can see that if I switch out of the presenter view. Oh, end show, there we go. Cool, okay. So when I'm connected to my Swarm, I ask for a list of services and it shows me all of them. It doesn't say, well, there are some on Windows, some on Linux. It doesn't care. As far as Docker's concerned, you're going to manage these all in the same way. That replicated mode means that the way I've created these services is to have to specify a service level, to say how many containers I want running across the Swarm. And the number of replicas is the number that are currently running. In each case, I've only got one, because I only need one of each of these things. But if I had multiple servers in my cluster of each type, then I could spin this up and have multiple replicas. If I needed to deal with a sudden spike of traffic, because my website is using the asynchronous message queue, I could scale up the website, and those messages might back up in the queue, and then I can scale up the handlers to deal with all the message load. So the Swarm lets me do all that sort of stuff. It does let me do the zero downtime upgrades too. So I could upgrade that service that's running the website to version 2 of my application without losing any connectivity, without users having any downtime. Okay, so when I'm on this node, these are all just normal Docker containers. So if I do a Docker PS, which lists me the containers that are running, it shows me these which are part of the service. So these are running on this machine, which is my Linux machine. And I can interact with them in the same way that I normally would. So if I want to see what's going on, I can run Docker logs. 548 is the Kibana container. And I see all this stuff from the Kibana logs, which is all the access to the website. And similarly with my Elasticsearch, I can look at Docker logs. And it's going to show me a whole bunch of Java output, because it happens to be a Java application that's now running on Linux. And the Windows machines, I can do exactly the same. If I want to connect to the machine and get a low-level view of what's running, I can connect and do Docker PS, and this shows me all those containers that are running, and I'm going to manage them in the same way too. So I'll do Docker logs and look at my message queue, which is A88. And this is the output from NATS, which is the Go server. All those Docker commands behave in exactly the same way. They talk to the Docker engine, which talks to the container, and it doesn't care which node they're running on or which platform they're using, or whether it's Linux or Windows. So suddenly you're managing all your workloads in the same way. And Docker top is another good example. So Docker top will show me all the processes that are running. This is NATS running on my Windows machine. So the only process I care about is gnatsd at the end, which is the Go server that's running NATS, the message queue. And that's using next to no CPU and 2 meg of RAM. There's a whole bunch of other stuff here, which is the minimum you need to run a Windows container. So all these service hosts for background Windows processes, which you have to have as part of every Windows container. So when I move this over now to Linux, we'll see there's a lot smaller footprint. So that's one reason for going to a hybrid Swarm and moving some of these workloads onto open source Linux. So back to my cheat sheet. So I'll do the same thing again. I'll remove the message queue, which is running on Windows currently. And I'll spin up a new instance using a different image, which is a Linux image, and with a constraint that says I want it to run on Linux. So that constraint flag will let me do I can put any arbitrary label that I want onto my node. So I could have a label that says, this is a fast disk node. So I could say that certain types of workload are going to only run on solid state machines, and I could attribute them that way. Or I could attribute them by an environment and call it production and test, or by a project, however you want to slice it. So that's running now. So now when I look at my services, same set of services, but NATS, the message queue, is now running on version 0.9 of the message queue, which is a Linux-based container. And here, it is on my Linux VM. And I can go and look at the logs again. I get the same output out, because it's the same piece of software. It's just running in a different way. But when I look at the processes that are running, then I'll see a difference. Oh, let's try that again. So the processes that are running in my Linux container, there's only one. there's only the NATD process, which is running with its configuration file. So there isn't all the extra weight that you have in a Windows container. Because of the way Linux works, all the stuff that it needs, the background services, like checking for DNS, network connectivity, all that sort of stuff, is all shared with the kernel. So my Linux VM, when my container runs on it, the container is going to use all those services from the base operating system. With Windows, they made a decision that some services would come from the kernel and some would come inside the container. So all those service hosts that were running on the Windows container were the background things that it has to have running because it's not all shared from the kernel. So the Linux container is more lightweight in what it needs to do. But again, that hasn't changed the application, hopefully. So if I go back here and change that to some threes and click go, there's going to be a delay because my website is connecting to the message queue and it's going to find a new message queue now. So there's a second or two while it connects to the new message queue. Once it's found it, that connection will have been persisted. So I can go back now and put in some 444s and we won't have that delay again. I should just have this form filled out for me. And you know, I own the code, so it'd be a lot easier to demo if I didn't have to do all this stuff. So Docker Inc. developer advocate go. So now I don't have a wait because it's already made that persistent connection to my Linux container now. It didn't have to do anything other than find it, but there was a slight delay while it found the new route to the new container, which is to do with NATs, not to do with Docker. So now back in Kibana, it's the same instance of Kibana running. So now if I update my search, I'll see my original 222 and 333 and 444 there. So everything else has continued, even though I've pulled the message queue out, everything else has carried on running. So that's moving more services away from my Windows container and towards my Linux containers. And that's not just the lightweight process isn't the only reason for doing that. So there are also, giving the game away there. There are financial reasons for doing that. There are scalability reasons for doing that. So if you're moving, if you've got a hybrid workload anyway, or a workload which could potentially be hybrid, then by breaking some of it up and running it on Linux, your running costs will be smaller, your maintenance overhead should be smaller. And you should be able to get slightly greater density. So that NATS message queue takes up a lot less effort as a Linux container than it does as a Windows container. Okay, and so I should probably have ended here, because it's pretty cool to be able to move this stuff around to different containers and have the application running. But I wanted to try SQL Server, because you can get SQL Server for Linux now, and I'd actually never tried SQL Server for Linux. But the idea here is follow the same process. I'm going to take off the old message queue, SQL Server instance running on Windows, replace it with a preview instance of SQL Server on Linux, and just kind of see if it works. So who thinks it will work? Okay. Well, that's not very encouraging. So there's one extra thing that I need to do. So my application creates the data. It's using Entity Framework code first. So the code for creating the database is baked into the application. So it only does it on startup. So I can't just replace the database and expect the website to carry on working because it only does that schema creation on startup. So I need to do the same thing as before. I can remove the old database and create a new one on Linux. Let's clear this down and create a new one. And again, same deal. So I'm using a different image. I'm using MS SQL Server Linux Community Preview 1.4. But the rest of it is all the same. So I'm adding a constraint for Linux this time, but I'm publishing the SQL Server port to the host. So if I want to, I can connect to this with SQL Server Management Studio or any other SQL client. And I'm using an environment file for the credentials. So that's things like the admin password, which I could use. Docker has a better way of working with passwords and stuff, which will be another demo. But this is just saying, get everything you need from that environment file and set it up as environment variables. So now, spell service. So again, so now I'm using a different image. I'm using my SQL Server Linux image for my database, but it's got the same name, it's got the same service name, so it will still get found. But I need to restart my web application, otherwise it's not going to try and recreate the schema. So I can force an update, and that will just restart the service. This command here, the service update, is how you do a rolling update. So instead of doing the force flag, if I gave it a new image name, it would take down my web container and spin up a new container with a new image, which is how you do your rolling upgrades. But just by forcing it, I'm saying use the same image, but shut that service down, no matter how many containers there are, no matter what nodes they're on, and bring up new ones to replace them. Okay, so for all the doubters, this will take a little while to start up, and I'll show you why it didn't take a while to start up last time. In the Docker file for this application, which is my web application, there are a few things going on here. So this is my ASP.NET application. It's based on Windows Server Core, so I've gone right back to effectively an empty install of Windows. I'm switching to use PowerShell so I can run PowerShell for the rest of the Docker file. And then there's a few things that I have to do to make Windows work correctly in a distributed environment. So it's annoying that you have to do it, but it's good that you can, because it shows you that even for creaky old applications that need certain tweaks to the registry, you can still do that even in the brave new world of Docker. So this set item property here at line 5 is turning off the DNS cache in Windows, because the DNS cache in Windows is too aggressive. So it will, if the first time it gets to access, say, the database from the web container, it will go to the Docker DNS server, and it might be too fast for Docker to respond and say it's on this address. And Windows will cache an empty response. So the next time it's made that request, instead of going back to Docker, it will use the empty response and it will fail. So you're pretty much going to see this on all Windows Docker files that connect to anything else. Turn off the DNS cache, fine. Now I'm adding Windows features, so I'm adding IIS, .NET Framework, ASP.NET, all the things I need for my application. Rather than use Microsoft's packaged image, I'm going right back to a bare install of Windows Server and adding all the pieces that I need so that I know that exactly what's gone into my Docker file, my Docker image. When you get your Docker file for a production environment, effectively it replaces your deployment document for this part of the application. So this is a full statement of everything you need from a blank install of Windows to get your application running. So I set up a few bits of Windows, and I copy in the website from whichever machine I'm building this into a known location on the image, and then I run some more PowerShell to start create a website for my product launch website and point it to port 80. Expose port 80 to allow traffic in, and then this is an environment variable which defaults the location of the message queue. So it looks like a kind of nasty hard-coded line, but because I'm always going to own the environment, I can always make sure that my message queue container is called message queue, so it's safe to have that kind of default. I can override it, but that default is safe to have, because every time I create this distributed environment, I'm going to have all these things with known names and known locations. And there's a few other bits and pieces that I copy in there, and the entry point is this bootstrap command, which is telling Docker what to do when the application starts, which in this case is going to start IIS and monitor it to make sure that it's all working. The last thing is the health check. So when Docker starts a container, it checks the process that it started to make sure that it's still up. So in the case of NATS, it will check that NATSD process. In the case of Nginx, it will check the Nginx process to make sure it's running. But that's just a check that it's still alive. It's not a check that it's still healthy. So if your web application was returning 503s constantly, Docker would see the process is still running, and it would say everything's fine. The health check command came in last year, and it lets you tell Docker how to check the application is still healthy. And it just takes a command. So in this case, some PowerShell. I'm going to make a web request to the local web server on port 80, because this will run inside the container on a schedule. So by default, Docker will run this every 30 seconds. It runs inside the container. As long as I get a response code to 200, that's fine. Anything else isn't fine, and I can flag up to Docker that there's something wrong with it. And when I'm running in swarm mode, if there's a problem with it, the health check fails, Docker will take that container down and start up a new one. So it's checking that everything's healthy, and it can react to when it's not healthy. So, okay, cool. And because that's running every 30 seconds, it's also very useful for warming stuff up or keeping a cache alive. So if you have some parts of your code that refresh the cache every 20 seconds, because you've got your health check every 30 seconds, it should mean that the end users don't hit slowdown while the cache is being updated, because that will have been updated as part of the health check. So this is up now. And the fact that I've got values in the dropdown is saying that it's working. So I'll go through with the same old rigmarole and put my 555s in. And this is now going to be saved in SQL Server running on Linux, which is frankly staggering in itself if it works. Okay, cool. So I get my thank you, I go back to Kibana, and I've got my new data, which is my 555. There it is. Cool. So that's all fine. If I go and look on my Windows box, so I'll clear this out, have a look at my processes, and I've got two message handlers. One is the index handler. So if I check the logs for that, I'll see it saving data to SQL, to Elasticsearch. So this is just a console application, a Windows console app that Docker's running for me. And every time it gets a message, it says, I've received the message, I'm indexing it to SQL, to Elasticsearch, and I've saved it to Elasticsearch. And the SQL Server one does something very similar. So if I look at the logs for, where are we, F1D, then I've got the same thing. So you'll see that the prospect ID goes 1, 2, 3, 4, because it's an auto-incrementing ID, and it goes back to 1, because between 4 and 1, I switched to a new database running on SQL Server. So that's saved in SQL Server. Now I've got a prospect ID coming out of SQL Server, and an event ID which has come from my event generator. So I should, if I can get this to work, be able to connect to SQL Server. So this is, how do I do that again? And execute query. So this is a Visual Studio Code add-in that lets me connect to SQL Server and execute some code. So in this case, I'm connected to my 10.211.55, which is my VM, and I've just executed SelectStar from prospects, and this is the data that I've put in. The UI is a little bit wonky, unfortunately, but there you are. You can see there's my Elton 555. So that's connected to SQL Server, running on Linux inside a container on a Linux VM inside my Mac. It was written to by an ASP.NET container running inside Windows on my Windows VM on my Mac that were in the same Docker network. Did you get that? Yeah, good, excellent. Okay, so for anyone who said they didn't think it would work, I accept your apology. So that's the big finale. So we've gone from literally by running a few Docker commands and changing the images that I'm using, I've now got a hybrid implementation. So I've got the things that have to be on Windows are running on Windows. So my web application isn't .NET Core. To make it .NET Core is a re-architecture piece. So I can leave that as it is. My message handlers, likewise, they're running on full .NET framework. So in order to change that, I'd have to do development work to bring those into the world of .NET Core, which I might not want to do. These might be old applications that don't justify the investment in re-architecting them. But the other pieces that I can swap out, I can literally swap out. In some cases with the application still running. So I can move from a single heterogeneous environment of Windows to a hybrid environment and let Docker do all the plumbing for me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really think it would work that well, so I've left some time at the end. But that's cool. So that's how this stuff works. So you create your swarm literally with a couple of commands, and then you can create services and join them together over the same Docker network. So I'm open for questions. No questions.
No stickers.
Oh yeah, helps have the stickers and stuff, obviously, at the end.
So if you have dependencies between containers, for example, your service, you're running a service in a database, and you have some dependencies between them, how do you update both without having any issue with the integration between them? You change the data model for the database.
Mm-hmm.
That's not compatible with the oldest version of your service.
Yeah.
And vice versa. How do you manage it?
Yeah. Okay. So the question is, how do you deal with changes where there is a structural change to a dependency, not just moving something as is? Well, Docker's not magic. It's not going to do that for you. So you need to deal with that the same way you currently deal with things. So whether you take down, what you can do is you can create a new service and have it running on a different port. So you could validate that everything's working and point to different parts and then do like a DNS flip or something like that if you needed to. Whatever you would currently do. The best answer is to try and make your services version compatible with different versions. So if you have a new database schema that you release, then as part of doing that, you would do an upgrade. It would see the existing data, it would do a diff, change the schema to match whatever version 2 is going to be. And then your version 1 container would need to know if it's missing something, then it shouldn't write, or it should raise a failure. You've got to bear in mind that the service update, the rolling update, happens in seconds. So if you have something that's fundamentally incompatible and you need to take the service down publicly so it's not available, it'll be down for seconds, and then you bring it all back up again. So the way you do that rollout you can configure how fast that runs. So by default, if you've got 10 containers, it will take one down at a time, take one down, bring up the new version, run the health check, make sure it's all okay, and then it'll roll it out. But you can specify to say, well, do them all at the same time, or do them one at a time and then wait a minute before you do anything else. So that's all configurable, and for each individual service. So you can configure that how you want to.
Regarding the changing from OS, is doing fresh installations. Is it possible to do a migration, for example, if I want to have everything on Windows and need to cut my costs and move some of the applications to Linux, but I don't want the fresh installation. I want a migration between environments.
So the question is, can you migrate and keep your state effectively? I'm not sure. So it depends on how the data is stored and whether the data storage is cross-platform. So you could run this container and point the volume where it stores the data to somewhere, to a shared location. So you could use an NFS share or whatever you like. And then you could, if the container goes down, you start a new one, point it to the same data location, and the data will still be there. But whether, I don't actually know whether SQL Server uses the same MDF and LDF structure on Linux as it does on Windows. I don't know about that. Elasticsearch does, so in theory you could do that, but you know, trying to do that in this demo would be a bit scary. Maybe next, give it a few more months. All done. Oh, okay, cool. Well, that was a lot quicker than I thought it was going to be. I did leave quite a lot of time to find problems in case there were any. In this case, yeah, but this isn't how you would normally do it. So if I show you how that stuff started. So this is just a quick demo installation, but the way you would normally do it, let's go back to my compose file. So this is how I construct that service in Docker Compose. I'm just telling it which image to use, which network to connect to, and the environment variables that you need. Another flag that you would put in is the volume. So the way Docker deals with state is to say, I've got my image, which is read-only. So my SQL Server image is completely read-only. When I create a container, the container has like a read-write layer on top. So I could have, if I had like a Windows web application, I could have 10 instances running. I'd have one shared image, which is read-only, and then each container would have a thin read-write layer on top to make its own changes to whatever it does to the image. You can also have a volume. So inside there, I could say if I wanted to write my logs to somewhere central, I could create a Docker volume as part of my Docker file and say this is where the logs need to live. And when I run my container, I can say that volume should map to a certain location on the host. So a /logs or whatever. And that's where all the data gets written. So in that example, if a request comes into the web server writes its log entry. It thinks it's writing it locally, but actually Docker is repointing it to a place on the host. And that's what you would do with your database. So in this case, I would have I'd have a volume saying that the data directory needs to live on the host, and then I could take that container down and spin up a new one, and the new container would have all the old data because it's living on the host. So that's how you deal with that sort of stuff. And I mentioned this morning that we don't really have a good, the platform itself doesn't have built-in shared state at the moment. So there are plugins, so I can say if I'm using HPE, a 3-part storage, I can use that as my volume location, and so I can have shared state that way if your infrastructure supports it. If you're on Azure, you can use Azure storage as a shared location. So you store it in one place and any container can pick it up. But at the moment, that's dependent on your host platform, but in the future, that should come into Docker too, so you won't care what you're running on.
Right now, I'm making manually sending the new versions to my Docker images. Is it possible to make them auto create themselves? Let's say they detect the new version and they just get the new code.
So the question is, can you make a container aware of the image version and aware of an upgrade and auto upgrade itself? No. So that's the basic answer. So. The notion of a container is meant to be ignorant. It's meant to be short-lived. It's not meant to know what it's doing. Inside a container, the application thinks it's running on a server. It's got its own host name, which is a made-up host name. It's got its own IP address, which is a virtual IP address. It thinks it's got exclusive access to that server. You can run Docker inside a Docker container, but you wouldn't really do that for production. So in theory, you could kind of say, is there an upgrade? But that you just get into this sort of weird, and the universe might implode. So rather than risk that, so at the moment, no, you can. The idea is you control it centrally, and the containers themselves are meant to be dumb. Cool. Okay, well, thanks very much. Enjoy the rest of your day.